This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So the studio here has three TV screens. And I sort of turned them all in a rush whenever I sat down this morning. And two of them are on ESPN stations, and I was trying to turn the other one to the 209, which was ESPN2. But I actually just typed 09, and it went to, what is it, ABC? Doesn't matter. That's ABC. And there have been animal shows on this whole time. And there was a Jack Hanna show with a lot of penguins, which is great. I love penguins. Favorite animal. But now, it's some other show, and there are pictures of seals with large bites out of them. And other, like, gross, gory wounds. And seals are like little sea puppies. I don't want to see that. It's getting me down, to be honest. I'm just trying to make friends, but they've got all these gross gashes and everything. Other seals are making fun of them. I'm a little bit down. So what can bring up my spirits better than Seth Kaiser? He's at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. He's the best Chiefs fanalist in the game. Seth, what's your favorite animal?
My favorite animal?
Yep.
Oh, man. Oh, man. You know what? I'm a classics kind of guy. I'm going to have to go with a dog.
Just like a normal, basic, like, house dog?
Yeah, not when I say dog, I don't mean like overgrown rats.
Right,
like,
not a Yorkie.
You know, the yippy things, the little things. I mean like a lab,
okay.
Retriever, a shepherd, a dog.
How do you feel like it would make you feel to see a seal with a bite taking out of it?
Well, you know, I don't know if you ever saw Happy Feet.
I did.
Seals are not always cute and cuddly, my friend.
No, you're absolutely right. But this one, like right now, I'm watching this seal lay gently in a puddle. But it's got, like, this big, gross, pink wound, like, on its neck. It's just, it's very distressing.
Think of it glass half full. He made it.
So far.
Yeah, so far. Yeah, you know, his odds aren't that good.
No!
Nature is brutal, my friend.
I know.
That's nature, man. I saw, there's a whole Twitter feed called Nature is Scary.
Oh, good.
And it is the greatest thing. It is amazing. I'm not trying to plug someone else's Twitter feed, but it is awesome. Like, there's one where this seal's just kind of hanging out in the water, and this orca slaps it with its tail, and it goes about 100 yards
in the air. I've seen that. Yes. Oh, it's crazy. You know, there's a subreddit.
I'm not helping, am I?
No. If I can't see it, it's fine. It's also how I get through, like, a very difficult political world, you know? Like, if I can't see that kind of suffering, you know, what does it really do to me? I made a joke. Beards is just shaking his head on the side because I've talked to him about politics today, and he told me that if I say the name James Comey, he's going to turn on national programming and just turn off this entire station. So we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it.
I think that's fair.
It totally is.
If you say that name, I'm going to start yelling like, danger, danger, or something like that.
I don't want you to just hang up and go, why did he do that? Oh, I said the buzzword.
You said one of my trigger words.
Yeah. So here's one of my trigger words, Tano Passanio. How did I do? Is that actually how it's pronounced? I'm still working on it. I've been practicing a lot.
You know what? Why not? I like it.
Okay.
You know what? I actually, the Locked On Chiefs that I appear with, one of the guys on there, he's like, his wife like majors in French or knows French or teaches French. And he confirmed that that's how you say it, the way you just said
okay.
it. I still can't say it, but I can hear it and know that it sounds right.
Okay, great. Well, I'll take it. I'll take that for what it's worth. You've watched more of his films since the last time we talked, and I've done, you know, absolutely the minimal amount of research just to be able to say his name right and be able to ask you questions about him. But I think we might be of similar mind on this. I'm curious what you've seen in your recent tape watching of good old K-Pass, uh-huh. even though the K is silent, so just pass, I guess. I'm curious what you've seen, what's jumped out at you, and also in a draft that was so widely criticized for the top two picks being guys who aren't really going to do much to help the team this year, I'm curious if you have developed your view on what his value is for the team Chiefs as well.
Sure. Well, you know, when so I was able to go back on Draft Breakdown and watch a couple of his games, and then what I finally did out of frustration, you know, because you can only go through highlight film so much time, because that doesn't really mean much.
Right.
It's all someone's best plays. I guess you can find, like, top-end traits, but that's about it. Because everyone that gets drafted has a good highlight film. They're just going to.
Right.
So what I actually did is I went back and just watched the Senior Bowl, snap by snap, and figured out which snaps he was in to review,
mm-hmm.
which it took a while. It was annoying.
It sounds like too much work.
Well, you know what? I do these things so you don't have to.
And I appreciate it so much.
So then what I did is I actually, since I was watching a full game, I scored it the way that I would if I was watching, say, Chris Jones or doing film review, or like when I did film review on Benny Logan. And so what I do is I track a wins and losses against the pass, so as a pass rusher, and against the run. Now, it's a fairly subjective thing. You know, a win is what it sounds like when you beat the offensive lineman in front of you. A loss is when you get beat, right? I mean, okay. These are fairly subjective
sure.
terms, but you can get a pretty good idea of it. And then you can also track neutral snaps. Like, say, for example, you're a defensive end on the right side and they immediately throw a bubble screen to the other side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
You really didn't do much there.
Right.
It's not a win or a loss.
Right.
So, you know, there's some value to the Senior Bowl because, for a couple reasons. One, his college film, and I mean no disrespect to the conference that he was in,
mm-hmm.
the quality of competition was just way too bad.
Right, and you do mean disrespect to the conference. You absolutely do.
Well,
that is blatantly disrespectful.
Like, I don't mean anything by this, but
right.
No
offense.
Person, you know?
Right, yes.
Yeah, there's... The quality of the offensive linemen that he was facing, you know, the sets they were taking, their punches, it was just bad. And so
sure.
you can't really take a lot out of it. On the flip side of it, every game that I watched, he was just getting constant attention. Teams would never run to his side. They were always sending chips his way. They were always sending multiple blockers his way.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it bounces out in the end. I don't know. But I can't take away much from that film because it doesn't resemble at all players he'll be seeing in the pros. The Senior Bowl is a little different. And so I actually got intrigued when I saw it was going around Twitter. I think you might have seen it. A one-on-one set he had against Forrest Lamp where it was just a one-on-one, you know, pass rushing drill.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he just took Lamp and, I mean, threw him to the ground in a way, it's not even describing it violently enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, threw him about 5 or 6 feet in the air. And Torrey twisted on the ground, and I think that might have been the rep that Lamp got hurt because he was really slow getting up. And that was like, huh, well, that's interesting because Lamp is supposed to be this wonderful guard prospect.
Right.
And passing on really embarrassed him. And so I went back and I watched the Senior Bowl, you know, to track wins, losses. You got to remember, defensive players, they're not going to just rack up the wins.
Right.
Because if they did, teams would average, you know, 3 points a game.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
And so losses can be almost as common as wins, and usually it's a neutral play for defensive players, even really good ones. You're going to have more neutral plays than wins, except like in a freakish performance like Justin Houston against Denver last year.
Right.
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 So I went back, and what I found, I was very, very pleasantly surprised because this was the best competition that he'd faced his entire collegiate career. By far, it's not even close, right? The jump from whatever conference Villanova's in to the guys at the Senior Bowl is a considerable one. And so I figured if he just held his own, I would be impressed. Instead, I can't remember how many pass rush wins I tracked him having, but I think it was 8 or 9. And he had a sack, he had 2 quarterback hits, like 3 quarterback pressures. He actually, if you really go back and even look at it objectively, he's arguably the best defensive player on the field on his team.
Hmm.
And so that was really intriguing to me because, again, best quality competition he ever faced. He only had a week to get coached up to face these guys.
Right.
And he really went out there and performed very, very well. He also demonstrated, now he played almost entirely at, well, he played entirely at defensive end. A few times at left end, but mostly at right defensive end. And so I'm really curious how they'll use him because he was often lined up almost in a wide 9 spot outside the left tackle.
Right.
And so, but he He set the edge very, very well against the run. He's got these freakishly long arms. And he's just, I mean, you see how he's built. I mean, he doesn't look like a real person. And so he's got heavy hands, and so he's able to just push the tackle off of him, keep his head up, and just wait for the running back to come to him. Then he picks which gap the running back's going through, and he hits him. And it was actually a really impressive performance. And so that, here's the thing, it's one game.
Mm-hmm.
But it did kind of make me stop and think. With guys like him who are small school guys, they're coming into, you know, the big leagues, having received almost no upper-tier coaching, all that stuff. Occasionally, you'll see a guy who immediately performs very, very well. And after watching the Senior Bowl, I've changed my, there's no way he contributes in 2017, to, well, maybe. Because he didn't just hold his own against a bunch of guys that ended up getting drafted. He had a pretty dominant performance. And so that makes me wonder, with an offseason, picking up a few tricks of the trade,
mm-hmm.
is he a guy that could actually take advantage of those ridiculous physical tools? I think there's a shot after watching that. It was that good a performance. And again, it's only one game. But I'm pretty sure that's what made Dorsey decide to go get him.
On the other side of the ball, on the other line, this news feels like a lifetime ago, but whenever Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's contract was announced, I was surprised at the numbers of it. The logic I understood, it was similar in a lot of ways, I felt like, to what the Chiefs were doing with Eric Fisher, saying we're going to pay him for what we expect him to become. But you've done a bunch of LDT tape watching and gift tweeting again over at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. I'm curious what your biggest takeaways from that sort of that little assignment that you took on for LDT. I'm curious as to what your main takeaways from his performance last year were.
Sure. Well, I'm only through four games, so I've got a couple more. My goal is to do six games so you can really get a clear idea.
Mm-hmm.
You can see him against multiple teams, that kind of stuff. One cool thing is I've reviewed the Jacksonville and Denver games, and what that's allowed me to do is watch him against Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe.
Yep.
Because last year, Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe did things to him that are borderline illegal.
Go.
Okay.
Go.
In 2015,
great.
You know, his first year. I mean, he just got victimized
right.
by those guys.
Yes.
And so it was interesting to get a chance because he actually, in the first matchup against Denver, was matched up against Wolfe one-on-one quite a bit. And that's a tough assignment. Wolfe is a good player. Very strong, good moves, great hand usage. And what I found is LDT went from just getting destroyed last year is now 2016.
Right.
In 2015 to where 2016, you know, he didn't dominate Wolf, and he had some losses there, but he also had quite a few wins, and he held his own the majority of the time. And so that kind of is a good springboard into what I've seen with LDT. He had some major weaknesses in 2015. The biggest one that I found was he had this tendency when he got locked up to lean or lunge, which is a big no-no as an offensive lineman.
Right? Sure, yeah.
Because a good push-pull move is going to send you flying. And that's what happened to him over and over and over again. And his biggest, you know, that was his biggest problem, his balance and his tendency to lunge rather than punch with his, you know, his head kind of still above his hips, right? And so it was interesting to watch this year. And because the problem that created for him was that his losses, you know, I haven't figured out a way to avoid this, but not all losses are created equal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, losing to a guy who gets around the edge in like 2.5 seconds, that's not good.
Right.
But it's a lot better than having a guy just blow right past you in 1 second, right?
Sure.
LDT's problem in 2015 is his losses were like instantaneous. I mean, they created immediate pressure, and immediate pressure up the middle kills plays, whether it's a run play, pass play, mm-hmm. and that's what was happening with him. Now, this year, what I found is a few things. One, his loss percentage was lower. I haven't crunched the numbers yet, but I think he might be under that magical 10% number that I look for with loss percentage. Second thing, his losses were slower, to where even when he would have like a snap that I labeled as a loss against Wolf, he was able to hold him off for a second or two, as opposed to just getting steamrolled. And what that means is the play doesn't necessarily get blown up. And then three, all the things that I looked at last year, the lunging, the leaning, the lack of balance at times, the fact that he always seemed lost when he needed to help. Because oftentimes guards are left free, right? So you need to be able to have your head on a swivel and stay busy, look for work, all that fun stuff. He wasn't that good at that. He had clearly worked on it. His hands were almost always up, and his head was almost always on a swivel, finding guys to help. He almost always stayed busy snap by snap, whereas in 2015, you could pick out tons of snaps where he just didn't block anybody.
But what I'm hearing from you now, though,
what I would say overall is 2016, he didn't turn into a Pro Bowler. You know, I'm giving a fairly positive spin.
Right.
But the thing is, he was very bad in 2015. And I watched 2016, it does not... You can tell it's the same player, obviously, because he's still got, you know, good speed, but he looks stronger. I would put him at to above average guard play, based on what I've seen so far, which is a huge leap. And I assume that's why he got that contract, because what they're thinking is, we've got this guy, like you talked about, he comes from, you know, basically, you know, Schenectady, and no one knows where. And now, all of a sudden, just after a few, every year he made a huge leap. His first year, he got destroyed in preseason by third stringers. His second year, he got destroyed as a starter against starters, but he at least didn't get, I don't know, completely destroyed? I don't know. And then this last year, he looked okay out there. And so I think they're definitely seeing some really big jumps from him. And I actually, I was very comfortable calling him a pretty solid part of the line. I was impressed with him.
So he's a guy that showed development from year to year. This contract has over $20 million guaranteed money. It's just it was a big number. Would you agree then at least that the Chiefs are saying we're trying to get ahead of the market on you? You know, if LDT doesn't grow more this season, that's a disappointment, right? For what he's being paid?
Oh yeah, I would say so. Now the other thing to think about, of course, as always, you know, contracts, they just keep growing and growing and growing. And so his contract looked huge, and then you had a couple of the kind of coveted free agent guard signed contracts that were bigger. And so I think if he stays at the exact level he's at or that he played in 2016, you know, the contract might be a little big, but with every year that goes by, it becomes a lot more palatable.
Right.
Because people often view the cap, they really should view it in terms of percentage rather than raw numbers.
And that percentage is going to get smaller.
Keep going down, just because the cap will just keep going up. But, you know, he does need to continue to improve because he still at times, you know, stunts, twists seem to get the best of him. And he still at times would show some of his old habits. But his improvement was so marked. And I assume this is the way Reed and Dorsey feel, that the odds of him improving drastically multiple years in a row and then suddenly just plateauing at such a young age, the chances of that are pretty small. And so if he improves even another 5, 10%, I think that's a great contract.
I can live with that. Something else where I think we might be of similar mind based off of everything that I've seen you put out on Twitter, but a place that is maybe the most contentious kind of fun debate right now among Chiefs fans is what the running back situation is going to look like for the Chiefs next year. So in the context of what we've seen from the guys on the roster, if you want to consider C.J. Spiller and now Kareem Hunt being added to the mix, the draft pick, how do you see the entire running back situation unfolding as training camp comes along, as the season goes on, by the end of the year? How do you see that developing and then ultimately ending up by hopefully like playoff time?
Sure. You know, you and I talked at length about Kareem Hunt a few weeks ago, I think, and I found his college film really impressive. Good vision, really good bounce, especially when he gets hit. Runs hard, pretty smooth receiver. He's got a little wiggle to him. And so I was really impressed by him. But I do think at the same time, because Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West spent a lot of last season kind of nicked up, I think a lot of fans are forgetting how comfortable they were with them.
Yeah.
Because they can play. They can absolutely play. Spencer Ware was a borderline. People were like, man, this dude's like an MVP candidate like 4 weeks into the season. Because he had played extremely well. And then, you know, he started getting nicked up here, nicked up there. The running game itself kind of slowed down a little bit. I don't know how, if it was appropriately used some of the time. But then by the end of the year, you know, people are kind of, you know, a lot of times it's just such this zero-sum game with a lot of people. A guy is either great or he's a bum.
Mm-hmm.
And so fans have kind of, you know, he's more of a backup and West should be replaced and all this stuff. I don't know if Spiller's going to factor in at all. I think he's going to start off behind the eight ball, much like Hunt will, because Reed seems to favor his guys that he's already got.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the onus comes on the new guys to beat him out. So I think you're going to start off probably seeing a lot of Ware and West, at least in training camp, et cetera. I do think Hunt is going to force his way into the rotation really, really early. Like, as in, by the time we're in week one, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be seeing a fairly good percentage of snaps. Because he really displays that kind of ability to pick up tough yards, not take losses, and pick up yards regardless of what the blocking does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really valuable skill. So I think by the time you get to week one, I think, depending on what we see out of West, because apparently he's dropped some weight and is feeling more explosive, looking to be more of a speed back than anything else,
mm-hmm.
I think what we're going to see a lot of is wear and hunt at the beginning of the year. And I think that's what will continue throughout the year, depending on how Ware does with injuries, because that seems to be what keeps nicking him up.
Right, yeah.
And it affects his running a little bit. At least it appears to on the surface. So I think you might start off with Ware as the primary guy and Hunt as the spelling guy early in the season. But then as the season moves along, if Ware gets nicked up again or whatever, I think there's a chance you could see Hunt as one of the primary guys down the stretch.
I'm right there with you on that. Another guy that is always worth the conversation, but I'm not sure that we've talked about, at least not for a while. You tweeted out a GIF from the Chiefs-Broncos game in Denver of Tyreek Hill beating Aqib Talib, and you pointed out that Talib was simply going to get beat by one route or another in that scenario.
Yep.
This is a two-parter, so take it at how you will, but how would you mm-hmm. be using Tyreek Hill in this year's offense, and how's Andy Reid probably going to be doing it? I'm sort of assuming that at least to some extent you guys aren't going to be on the same page.
Well, yeah, I have no idea. You know, whatever way Andy Reid uses him, I assume will probably be one of the best ways. Reid has my almost complete confidence as an offensive play caller. His route combinations are gorgeous when you watch all 22.
That's true. All right.
There are open receivers. It's unbelievable. As far as how I would use Tyreek Hill, well, for one, I'd use him more, yeah. Obviously. He's had a year now to learn the offense. I wouldn't line him up exclusively at wide receiver, but I would the vast majority of the time. Yeah, every now and then throw him in the backfield to give teams something to freak out about because mm-hmm. he's shown vision and that he can do it. But most of the time he should be lined up at wide receiver. He demonstrated beyond just speed, what the GIF you're talking about with Talib, he's got good stop-start ability,
mm-hmm.
and his routes don't look bad. A lot of speedsters like him, you know, if you ask him to run anything but a fly route, they look completely like a fish out of water.
Right.
And he doesn't. Even last year he didn't. Now, this, you know, this is mid-season by then. His snap counts are really increasing. And he puts corners in a tough spot. The GIF you're referencing, this was very late in the first Chiefs-Broncos game where they needed a stop. I can't remember if it was on the last touchdown drive or was on the drive that they got a field goal to win the game. I can't remember. But they needed a stop. Well, Talib didn't have deep safety help over the top on that snap, which unfortunately the GIF didn't show.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave like a 12 to 15-yard cushion because he has to. Talib's yep. a gifted corner, but yep. he's not a burner. And so he can't just press Hill at the line because there's a chance he's going to give up six. And so he gave up this big cushion, and then, you know, Hill just runs a real quick out and, you know, 10 yards. And there was nothing he could do about it. There's nothing Talib could do about it in that situation.
Talib, again,
is one of the best cover corners in the league.
One thing that GIF brought up for me that I hadn't thought of yet, one part of Tyreek Hill's game that it's going to be very hard to tell if this develops or not, but one trait that I would be thrilled to see and really could completely change his game is his ability to make a decision if it's ever left up to him on like an option route. If there's ever a time that's taken out of, say, Alex Smith's hands or Patrick Mahomes' hands, and if it's in Alex Smith's hands, he'll probably figure it out. But, man, if Tyreek Hill goes to the line every time, either with the capability of running a fly route or running a little out, that space is going to determine which one is going to be successful, and they're both, one of the two is always going to be successful unless he demands all of the attention. There's somebody, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, there was somebody on 810 recently, I genuinely don't remember who it was, I'm not just playing CYA, that was talking about how, you know, just use Tyreek Hill for everything, have him return punts and kicks, and then out of the backfield, and I just, he is too thoroughly valuable as an offensive weapon to be burnt up trying to do everything all at once. I can't follow that line of thinking.
Right. And I think they want to be cautious. You know, it's important to remember the Steelers still let Antonio Brown, almost universally regarded as the best receiver in the league, return punts.
DeSean Jackson also.
Too much of a weapon to not let him do it.
Yep. Odell Beckham returns punts sometimes.
I think they should let him continue to return punts just because he's that good. Mm-hmm. He forces teams, essentially. Teams aren't going to kick to him next year.
Right.
And so you're going to see some shanked punts. You're going to see some real short punts. And that affects the game, even if he doesn't ever run one back.
Yep.
I wouldn't use him out of the backfield a ton just because I don't want to see him take a complete beating, even though he's built kind of thick. He's not a scrawny dude.
No.
But I don't want to see him take the beating that a running back takes. And plus, again, his routes looked okay to me, and that's in year one. My understanding is he's working with Macklin and company a little this offseason. We saw the difference that made in Conley's route running in 2016. I think if you see even a small jump there, there's no reason to not have him lined up at receiver a lot because, like you talked about, it forces bad choices. It gives defensive coordinators no good options. They really have to leave safety help over the top unless you've got a top-tier cover corner with good speed. Otherwise, there's just not a whole lot they can do because he's too gifted physically. And so I would use him much more as a traditional wide receiver, but I would also keep a lot of those jet sweep actions that they used throughout last year. You know, and you're still lining them up a receiver that way, but, you know, let them run back and forth as the snap progresses and force the defense to do all kinds of crazy things to account for, especially in the running game.
Yep.
That was a really good addition to the running game. One of the few things about the running game that worked last year was, and I'm sure you saw a million of them, you know, the fake jet sweep to the side where Hill would run right as the ball was snapped to where the defense had to freeze and wait to see whether Hill got the ball or where West got the ball. That's a really good way to gain an extra half second. So I want them to keep using that stuff and occasionally give him the ball in those jet sweeps, force defenses to respect it. But overall, I would use him more as a traditional wide receiver to where you're lining him up, sending him on more go routes, post routes, stretching the defense deep, and giving him targets there, too.
Yes.
Because he's that good.
Absolutely.
He's a guy who really should get three or four deep shots a game. And then, you know, also let him expand on the route tree. Because, again, corners have to back up off him off the line. They just do. Unless they're so confident in their press. And he's shown a good ability to get off the line against press because he's got good quickness and he's surprisingly strong. So I say you force defenses to prepare for it in a more traditional sense rather than treating him as a gadget guy. In my opinion, he's not a gadget guy. He's closer, you know, people talk about his size. I mentioned Antonio Brown. He's the same size as Antonio Brown.
DeSean Jackson also. He's 10 pounds heavier and a few fractions of a second faster, but the same height as DeSean Jackson.
Yep. Which is insane.
Incredible.
And, you know, these are guys that are used almost exclusively as receivers because they can be. And I think, you know, people, because of the Chiefs' unique history with guys that are considered gadget players, like McCluster or DeAnthony Thomas, people are kind of lumping him in that same thing. And that's no disrespect to either of those players. I think they both have a role.
Again, that is disrespect to both of them, though. It definitely is.
Stop saying that, Josh. I really don't mean it like that.
It's the truth. You're disrespecting him.
Hill is just, I mean, he's faster. And he seems to run a little more refined routes, although McCluster became a pretty good route runner at the end, but he didn't have that same high-end speed. He was quick, but he wasn't fast.
Right.
And he's built a little bit thicker and stronger to where he can take a few more hits. And he's also demonstrated, and this is the all-important thing for me as a deep threat especially, he can track the ball in the air really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an underrated skill with deep threats. Or even guys that you want to have get the ball at the intermediate level. Because it doesn't matter how open you are, if you can't see where the ball is and go to it. And that's something he showed a really, really nice skill set. And so he, to me, he's a guy that you leave on the field the majority of the snaps. And you play him in a more traditional wide receiver role. Let him return punts because it'll affect the game. And I think he has the potential to be an actual wide receiver star, not a gadget player.
All right, Seth, real MN Chiefs fan on Twitter. If you haven't learned by now, he's the best fanalist on the planet. Seth, what's your next thing coming up? What can people look forward to?
The LDT film review, I've got two games left. I'm going to write that out. I actually do have an article coming out that I've already written that it's kind of more of a, it's less of a film review thing and it's just more for fun. I was reviewing the All-22 of that first Denver game, you know, the doink
field
goal.
Yes.
And they, if you watch the All-22, there's just this great widescreen shot of all the players reacting. And there's just so much to look at because you got Colquitt sitting there with his head down and then suddenly he realized it went in and he gets up and sprints. And you just see a few Denver players that are sitting there being cocky and thumping their chest, and then they turn and see the ref, and they just freak out. It's great. So I actually wrote like a quasi-breakdown.
Beautiful. That's good.
Of everyone's reactions. So that's what's coming up next, and then we're going to continue on the offensive line.
And that's all on Arrowhead Pride?
All on Arrowhead Pride.
ArrowheadPride.com, real MNC's fan on Twitter. Seth, as always, thank you for your time and your insight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh. Always a good...
He's just smarter than everybody else's. Just, or at least he watches more tape and then talks about it better than anybody else does. I'm smitten.
Hey, what's up? This is Vanilla Ice, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That is one of the best things that this station has ever produced, I think. I found that liner months ago, and I've been waiting for a chance to play it. Never did. And then Beards brought it out today. I appreciate it, Beards.
Today was the first time I'd seen that.
Yeah.
My jaw dropped. It was great.
It's amazing. It's just, it makes me feel like I've, finally, you know, I feel like I'm on a real radio station. I don't think a radio station truly exists until Vanilla Ice has created a liner for it. Breaking news, Kawhi Leonard's out for Game 3. I'm now reporting myself that the series has been over for, I don't know, what, 4 days now? The series has been over since the Warriors signed Kevin Durant. So we'll move on to something different. We'll talk about the NBA last night later on. But I was inspired by the last segment with Seth. It'll all be podcasted later on, 810WHB.com. But I was thinking about all the stuff that Seth and I talked about, and then also one thing we didn't get to as far as the quarterback position. And there's some sound of Alex Smith talking from last week that most of you have probably heard already. Beards, how long is the Alex Smith clip that you have? 2 minutes? So I think this is the full cut, the LP version of Alex Smith talking to Pete Sweeney, or at least being recorded and put on Twitter by Pete Sweeney, if I remember correctly. It doesn't really matter. Of him talking about the process with Patrick Mahomes and drafting a quarterback and him being kind of left to be the guy this year and then no further from that. And he says some interesting things in this sound, but I also want you to think about what he's saying about himself this year. I think there's going to be interesting things you'll hear here if you haven't heard this sound already, but then there's more beyond the surface that actually makes me really excited for the 2017 iteration of Alex Smith. But here's what he said about the whole quarterback changing process, bringing in Patrick Mahomes and his role in it all.
I certainly even knew, you know, speculating wise, like, yeah, and there was a good chance that we could take a guy. We hadn't really spent any kind of draft capital on a quarterback in a few years and knew it was a potential. But hadn't found out really till I came back and first sat down with Coach Reed.
So you said you reached out to him?
Patrick?
Mahomes?
Yeah, we talked. I thought, you know, I know he, you know, when he got drafted and then flew in the next day, you know, I knew he was obviously going to get you know, thrown to you guys.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Really just touching base. It was quick. You know, obviously it's a whirlwind. I can remember being there. It's a lot going on. You're meeting 1,000 different people. You know, it could kind of be an overload for me. I just wanted to introduce myself. You know, and that was really it. Let him kind of take in that, that's a special time to get drafted and, you know, have his family there. And really, for me, just kind of telling him to enjoy it. I just wanted to introduce myself and, you know, tell him we're going to have plenty of time to get to know each other. You know, it's really kind of started today. So, well, for me, I mean, I think, you know, in all these situations, they're all different. I don't think you want to shy away from anything. I just think you want to be real, right? You want to be honest. Almost even embrace, you know, sometimes it can be awkward or, you know, it is, I think, but you just kind of embrace that and be real. I think everybody kind of appreciates that, be honest, you know, and that's really what I just kind of emphasize to him, that, you know, that extracurricular stuff that maybe goes on elsewhere just doesn't take place here. It's just kind of the environment we have. I've been through it, and I'm in a different place, right, than the last time I ever, you know, kind of dealt with something like this. So just in a different place, in a different place of mind, you know, and I get it, right? Like if any of us were the GMs, right, this is, you know, in my opinion, maybe the most important position in all sports. And it'd be crazy not to be stockpiling talent, right? You'd be nuts not to be... in my opinion, so I get it, right? I'm going into year 13. You understand it. At the same time, that doesn't change my focus, right? I'm still trying. I feel like I got a lot of years left in me, and still feel like I'm getting better, to be honest with you.
Few things that I think you can take away from that, just from listening. First, that, you know, he talked to Pat Mahomes. That's good, but also I think we expect something out of Alex Smith that almost none of you would willingly do. Where people have been talking about how, you know, Smith's going to be a good mentor and he's going to really help Mahomes out and bring him up to speed and everything. Mahomes can learn from being behind Alex Smith, but would you willingly train your successor? Would you train the guy coming in to replace you? And you can say, I know the first response to this is, of course, if I was being paid $18 million, I'd do whatever my company told me to do. And you can say that. However, if Alex Smith does a really good job at training Patrick Mahomes, he costs himself like $20 million next year. Or it'd really be like 13. He's gonna get a bunch of money next year anyway. Actually, it might be more than 13. He's gonna get some money next year anyway that was guaranteed. But he will cost himself millions and millions and millions of dollars if he does an amazing job training Patrick Mahomes to take his job from him. So I don't think you would do that for your obvious successor. But we sort of innately expect Alex Smith to be doing that for Patrick Mahomes. I think that's pretty short-sighted. The other thing he mentioned is the Chiefs haven't really invested draft capital into a quarterback in his time here, which, you know, Kevin Hogan and Aaron Murray, I'm sure, wherever they are currently, were just furious to hear about that. But the other thing that brings up is, again, that Mahomes is Smith's obvious replacement. Colin Kaepernick, he talked about how he's in a different place than he was last time something like this happened. Colin Kaepernick was not his obvious replacement. He was a second-round pick. He was hopefully the guy who would develop. But the Chiefs traded up and got Patrick Mahomes, and everybody knows what's going on. Everybody from Alex Smith to Pat Mahomes to the Chiefs' Twitter account, who was putting out stuff about Pat Mahomes throwing a pass to Jeremy Maclin, effectively erasing Alex Smith from everyone's memory. Last time I talked about this, I said it was like watching, like before the ink on the divorce papers were dry, your mom was taping pictures of her boyfriend's face over the family photos of you and mom and dad. And the divorce hasn't even gone through yet, and the Chiefs' Twitter account is replacing Alex Smith with Pat Mahomes. Everybody knows what's going on there. Including Alex Smith, and Alex Smith gets it. I think you listen to that, and you come away believing in him whenever he says he gets it. Which I think bodes well for him becoming a coach or an analyst or somewhere in scouting, whatever, if he wants to have more work after he retires from football, even though he won't financially need it. He's been taken care of very well by the Chiefs. And he gets it, but it's still his replacement. However, The thing that I haven't heard anyone else talk about yet that I'm excited for this next version of Alex Smith, I'm excited about what he's going to be like whenever he knows he doesn't have to fight up against his successor showing up. He's here. Patrick Mahomes is here. Alex Smith is going to see him every day during the regular season. In the preseason, I mean, really, he's going to see him every day, period. They're going to be together all the time. And Alex Smith seems willing to, as he said, even embrace the awkwardness, the honesty of it, the truth of it. When Alex Smith doesn't have to be reserved to keep a job, whenever he knows that he has the faith of this group of coaches for this year, whenever he knows that he's safe to be himself here, I think we're going to see him play with a sense of abandon that I've been wanting to see from Alex Smith for so long now. Whenever Alex Smith is willing to be reckless and big and shoot deep and take risks, he's a better quarterback. Whenever he's willing to unhinge a little bit, take a few more shots, throw a few more picks, it usually ends up in also throwing a few more touchdowns. That's what Alex Smith is. It's what he can be. It's what he's become. There are a few instances that pop up of me looking at Alex Smith in a game going, man, I want more of that guy. I want that guy who's not looking over his shoulder. And I think in a weird way, having his successor be breathing right down his neck, he can see the end. I think he even knows at this point, him just being his normal average self isn't going to be enough to keep off Patrick Mahomes. So I think Smith knows he can play this year however he wants and maybe finally get rid of a little bit of that timidity that he seems to suffer from so deeply. And also, he has to perform at a riskier level to justify sticking around. That's just the reality of where Alex Smith is right now. As a quarterback, where Patrick Mahomes is as a quarterback, where the organization is. I was talking about this at the end of the last hour. The quarterbacks who have made the Super Bowl in the AFC since 2003, the list goes Manning, Brady, Ben, Flacco. You get one Joe Flacco in there, and even then, that was Joe Flacco on a rookie contract. Well, that defense was great, and it was expensive. That defense was the thing they were great at. And they could be so great at it because they weren't paying Joe Flacco very much. And quarterbacks are your big-ticket item. You don't get to even have that very often, and the Chiefs now are going to have a chance for that. If Patrick Mahomes is Joe Flacco next year, then you're going to see why I'm so eager to get Alex Smith out of town. Because you put Alex Smith's salary in somebody else's pocket, and all of a sudden, you have something else to build around. You have something else to build with. You simply have more. And that's exciting. I think that's where the future of the Chiefs goes at. But for this year, as Alex Smith is able to look ahead because he knows what's behind him, he doesn't have to be checking his watch to see exactly how long he has. He knows that everybody would like for this season to go well and then for him to step aside so Patrick Mahomes can slide in. That's got to be freeing, I think, for Alex Smith. Now there really is no question about what's next. And as long as he's performing, even as well as he's performed the last couple of years, there's not going to be any real question about what the present is. Now, even Nick Foles got some unjust talk for a little bit of, well, what if Nick Foles takes over? He's got a bigger arm and a bigger willingness to take shots downfield, which was absurd, and I said it was absurd at the time. Alex Smith is not going to have to deal with quite as much of that, even though the successor's right here. At the very least, he doesn't have to worry about what's next. So I think we might be getting a version of Alex Smith that's just a little bit freer, a little bit more willing to open it all up. And the next guy comes in, gives a chance to take the Chiefs to the next level. But maybe a reckless abandon version of Alex Smith is an Alex Smith that doesn't put on a seatbelt driving to the mailbox and back. I don't know what reckless abandon looks like in that context. Back to the phone. Let's go to Juice. Juice, you're on Sports Saturday. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Carlos?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. I really want to talk Chiefs football. I know nothing about the Royals, nothing about KU. I don't even like KU.
That's fine.
But what is it that Alex Smith can do to win over these fans? I mean, what else? The guy averages over 10, between 10 and 11 wins a season. What else? If he was in any other city, for at least 28 of the teams, he will be celebrated. But here, he's like the enemy. What else does he need to do?
Well, I think that for one, in Kansas City, we've got mediocre quarterback fatigue. So anything less than a guy who's able to make some big plays, like big plays that highlight plays that you see on SportsCenter, until we get that guy, I think we Chiefs fans in general are a little bit stunted in their expectations for quarterback. But beyond that, winning cures things, and the Chiefs ended up obviously winning regular season games last year, and Alex Smith was a part of that. But on a game-to-game basis, you saw him struggle. His best season with the Chiefs was not last season, but the year before. There was a regression last year, and now the future is right in front of him, or right behind him, I guess I should say, on the depth chart. So at this point, he's sandwiched between his own past and Patrick Mahomes is the future. But later on, I'm going to talk to a fantastic Chiefs analyst, and I'll talk a little bit about Alex Smith. I think this year is going to be fascinating for him, but go ahead.
Now, you said that he regressed last year. Now, I know you're probably just talking about the numbers. I'm looking at fourth quarter comebacks. You know, I'm looking at the things, the two-minute offense that he just completely improved on.
That's true. Absolutely.
Just different things like that. This guy's getting better every year. When I as a football head, when I'm looking at him, he's getting better every single year. Now, in the middle of the season, he did have a little regression with the Tampa Bay game and, you know, around the time he had a concussion. But, I mean, I don't see what else a person can do. I mean, putting Patrick Mahomes out there, having Herm Edwards season, I don't see what the thing is or why people want that.
I think what happens is, where would you put Alex Smith if you're trying to, you've watched, it sounds like you've watched plenty of Alex Smith. Where are you placing him in context of the rest of the NFL?
He's top 10 for sure. Top 10 quarterbacks.
And see, that's something I have a really hard time. Whenever if you pull up a list of the starting quarterbacks in the league, I think you have a hard time putting together 10 guys who you wouldn't take over Alex Smith. I can't get him that high up because I think his ceiling is limited. Right now, he's surrounded by a really nice array of weapons. And last year, again, I would still certainly argue that he regressed last year. The two-minute offense completely improved from the year previously,
right.
So I'll give you that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he, as a quarterback, he had less aggressive moments and more big mistakes. His entire game is built around not making big mistakes. And against the Titans and the Bucks last year, he made big mistakes. Now, Andy Reid also can shoulder the blame on this. But I think Alex Smith is entirely a stopgap quarterback. And a guy that can use the weapons around him. But what we've seen in the NFL so clearly over the last decade is if you don't have a top five quarterback, if you don't have an elite guy who can elevate the rest of the team and not just not hold it down, you don't have enough.
So this is my question for you.
Okay.
What has been consistent in Kansas City in the last 4 years besides Andy Reid and Alex Smith? Because we can't say the defense has been consistent because the personnel has consistently been changing or a ton of injuries. We can't say the offense and the playmakers have been consistent. We released 90% of our receivers. from actually we don't have any of the receivers we had when Alex Smith first got there.
Mm-hmm. The other thing
has been even the offensive line. Go ahead.
The other thing that's been consistent, I would argue, is winning no more than one playoff game at a time. And that's where I think it all kind of lands. Is yes, there's consistency in Alex Smith and Andy Reid, but that duo and Andy Reid and John Dorsey just admitted this also by trading up to go get Patrick Mahomes.
Uh-huh.
That duo has a pretty low ceiling, a higher ceiling than any bad team, to be sure. And in fact, they have a high ceiling for an average team. The kind of team maybe like the New York Giants the first time they beat the Patriots, where they got hot at the end of the year and they weren't a great team, but they did enough, and by the end of the year they won games in a row that ended up being a Super Bowl.
But they beat the greatest regular season team of all time.
Absolutely. And that is the best possible case scenario, obviously, for any team that's not built up with elite talent. I'm saying that happens once in a generation, where a team, and you can make it maybe like Joe Flacco's Ravens, where they had an amazing defense. Teams that aren't exceptional, and also the Giants had a better defense than Alex Smith's Chiefs have had. You have to be exceptional at something, and almost always in my lifetime, that exceptional thing for an NFL team who wins a Super Bowl has had to have been at the quarterback position. You can find me the exceptions, but they're certainly the exceptions.
Just looking in the last 10 to 20 years, you look at the 2000 Ravens, you look at the, what's the team that just won? Seattle, their quarterback is not an elite quarterback, Russell Wilson, that is. I mean, all these teams don't have anyone elite. You just named Joe Flacco, who's not elite either. I mean, it can easily be done.
You say that, and I'm going to try to find this exact thing for it. And, Juice, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Uh-huh.
Here are the AFC quarterbacks who have gone to the Super Bowl since 2003. Ready? Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Joe Flacco, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Brady or Roethlisberger in 2016 ended up being Tom Brady. That is a blindingly obvious number of Brady's, Manning's, and Roethlisberger's. In that decade and a half, nearly, you get one Joe Flacco. There's one Joe Flacco and a dozen Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger's. I don't know where to take you beyond that. I feel like that's about as far as I can walk this out. And in Reed and Dorsey, they get it also. The NFC's had a little bit more turmoil, but even then, I think you ultimately see where that comes down. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about sports.